Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone. Wellness, inspiration, support.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone, where we're going to provide, you know, wellness tips, inspiration, and support for everybody. We have on an incredible guest today that we are so excited to welcome. Her name is Ara Katz, and we're going to be talking about how we can rewire our microbiome. Ara is the author of a book called A Kid's Book About Your Microbiome. She's also a serial entrepreneur, advisor, angel investor, and has co-founded a company called Seed.com. Seed.com is an amazing company that both pioneers applications for microbiomes for both human and planetary health, and her work encompasses the translation of breakthrough science for a pipeline of probiotic innovations from discovery through commercialization across product, brand insights, design thinking, delivery technologies, and more. Ara, welcome to the show. If you could tell us a little bit about how you got into this and what you do day to day and how you see your role in this, not only professionally, but, you know, in this world of microbiome.
Yeah, thank you. I am the co-founder and co-CEO of Seed Health. And one of the things that's interesting about my everyday is that I am not a scientist running a science company. And of course, I have an extraordinary co-founder who oversees the scientific and research and development programs that we do. But actually, so much of my days today is really a culmination of a lot of the experience that you called out, which is really the translation of science, which I think, as many of us know, in the context of COVID and areas like vaccines and climate change, science has kind of never needed better communicators more. And so I spend a lot of time thinking about how to use the microbiome and all of these extraordinary things that we're learning about this invisible world that lives in, on, and around us, and how to use that as a way to empower people to understand their bodies, understand themselves, and make better choices for their health. And that's, it's a really fun, and incredibly impactful, area to be in today, which I'm excited to get into with you guys.
The microbiome, I hear about it all the time because my husband's a scientist, but I mean, I thought Marcia and I were just talking, and I know Marcia has a really important question, but I'm just saying it's so nice to finally talk to somebody that maybe isn't a scientist that can also speak in plain language about what all this is, you know, and why it's so important for us.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, my big question is, and please forgive me if this is a silly question, but I don't know the answer. So I'm guessing that maybe some of our audience doesn't know the answer. But Ara, what is a microbiome?
Well, it's not a silly question at all. In fact, people misuse the term all the time. And actually, sometimes I wish more conversations started off with an agreement or an alignment on what a term or what a word means, because I think there'd be a lot better communication in general, particularly when it comes to health. So it's not a silly question. It's one I'm very excited to answer and give you a great, great definition for. So the easiest way to think about it is that a microbiome, and I'll just use the human microbiome, although there's a soil microbiome, there's a coral microbiome, there's a microbiome in a honeybee, and there's microbiomes that exist, you know, in almost all living things. And so I will speak today about the human microbiome because I think that's what certainly your community will be most interested in. But it's important to know that microbes live all over this earth. They are not visible to the human eye, but they, of course, do extraordinarily important things for our health and in turn our microbes for theirs. And so the easiest way to think about the human microbiome is that you have trillions and trillions of microbes that live in, on, and around your body. That could be a bacterium, of which there are about 38 trillion, archaea, fungi, viruses, a whole host of different types of microbes that exist at very different points, ecosystems of the body. And even within your human microbiome, there are the gut microbiome, which is the most dense and diverse ecosystem, which and one of the ones that gets spoken about the most because it is incredibly critical to our health. It's also where the majority of them reside. Then you have the oral microbiome, so your mouth, which is the second most diverse ecosystem of the body, which again is important in so many aspects of not just your oral health, but increasingly we're starting to understand its correlation and interplay with other aspects of like neurodegenerative health, for example, or neurological health, and the development of neurodegenerative disease. Then there's other microbiomes for women. For example, the vaginal microbiome is a wholly different ecosystem than the gut microbiome, and one that is incredibly important when it comes to the protection for women against STIs, STDs. It impacts fertility, impacts even things like preterm birth. So there are multiple ecosystems and microbiomes on the body, but as a whole, it is referred to as your microbiome. Now, the reason that usually when people say that word, even though scientifically it means more specifically what I just described, they usually mean gut health and they usually mean the gut. And that's just because that's where so much of the story and the narrative, and also of course where the research started, but it's also where they you have this dense ecosystem that is connected systemically to so many critical functions and organ systems, and of course increasingly correlated with all kinds of conditions and states of disease, that has been so meaningful and impactful and really evolving how we understand ourselves, our bodies, pathology, and probably most importantly for what we'll talk about today, the decisions and choices that you can make each day that really directly impact that ecosystem that in turn can impact your health.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about.
Well, so thank you. You
know, yeah, thank you for that great, like, you know, explanation about this. But, you know, in terms of like our wellness and our health, and, you know, Marcia and I are both in the recovery community professionally and personally, and we know our audience is obviously very interested in how we can heal ourselves. And, you know, coming from a place of, let's say, an unhealthy lifestyle, and somebody changes their lifestyle and they're trying to, you know, I guess, not only become physically healthier, but emotionally healthier, mentally healthier, spiritually healthier. I mean, are microbiomes affected by our stress levels? Is it also like, I would think it does kind of, you know, if we're having stomach issues, stomach problems. I mean, I know we talk a lot about probiotics in our culture and that could help, but how much is stress involved and can people heal their microbiome and create a better balance in general, emotionally and mentally from being more mindful of this?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. And there's really clear, in some cases, more direct answers. And then in others, there's early research that would suggest some of the things that you're saying, although in practice and in anecdote, a lot of people would say yes, mm-hmm. even though maybe science would say mm-hmm. maybe, not yet.
We don't have enough yet. We don't know yet.
And yeah. So, you know, one of the interesting things about the microbiome is that, you know, there's an area, for example, of research called the gut-brain axis, which is the connectivity and the interplay between the gut and the brain. And there's so much that is being understood there. Around everything from depression and anxiety, response to your point, response to stress, and it's a bi-directional communication. So it's not just like one impacts the other. They actually are impacting one another, which is really interesting and a really important field where there's going to be extraordinary discoveries that lead, I think, and believe to all kinds of outcomes for everything from, you know, very pervasive conditions like IBS all the way to things like in areas like autism. And I think it's a fascinating field that's really unfolding in real time. The answer to your question is kind of nuanced because I think there are absolutely, you know, one of the beautiful things in your work and probably for your community is this notion of resilience, right? There's no kind of idyllic state of life and certainly in addiction because of course the journey out of addiction and really any all sorts of trauma and other psychological, you know, conditions, issues, and life circumstances is never a straight line from A to B, as you guys know. And I think one of the most beautiful things I think the microbiome offers is this notion of health as a state of resilience, not as a state of perfectness, this kind of place you'll never reach, which is like quote unquote health, as if there's some like nirvana or place that one day you'll get to, and therefore you're at the end of your journey and you're healthy. So the microbiome is great because ecosystems, and if you think about a rainforest or really like any kind of healthier, very lush and dense metaphor, you know, you can imagine that a small fire in a beautiful dense rainforest will have regrowth much faster than if in a very sparse environment that was not very cared for, where even a small fire can be totally detrimental. And you can see how that, of course, metaphor plays out really nicely with, recovery, because of course, what you're trying to do in recovery is not say you're never going to have stress, not say you're never going to be in another situation that could feel like it sets you back, because I think the reality of life is that that's not going to happen. But the question is, how quickly can you return to stasis in the face of stress? And a healthy microbiome is not really about this, like, you know, it's not always just about having like this dense, beautiful rainforest. We can kind of get into how all the lifestyle things you can do to cultivate that and ensure that you're at least nurturing the microbiome from the areas in the ways that we currently know today, what the science says. But you can also, it also creates a really beautiful metaphor that does take some of the suffering, I think, out of this idea that one day you have to reach something, but instead it's more about how you actually develop the methodologies to return to a state of resilience. And I think that that's what the microbiome is also teaching us about some of the things I think we've gotten wrong about health, which I think is really important. In terms of the very specific response to stress, absolutely microbes. There's like really interesting studies around like how microbes, even in a crowded elevator, you can see a shift. Like they've done like fun studies where you can see like a shift of microbiomes even under like tight circumstances or and then of course certainly under stress. And then of course when you get into really complex multifactorial conditions like IBS or autoimmune conditions, even very specific areas where, like autism, where you see very specific signatures of a microbiome that are highly correlated with these conditions, you start to kind of understand like how stress and other certain external conditions, of course, impact that ecosystem. In terms of the ways that you can heal the microbiome, I think that is a really interesting one, because I think it also offers an opportunity to kind of myth bust a little bit, where there's a lot of messages out in the world that just says like, recover your microbiome or rebalance your microbiome. And really that's a very challenging.
Or probiotics.
Yes, I feel like, yeah, a lot of probiotics.
Yeah, probiotics is what we hear the most about.
Yeah, and it's a little, probiotics, I mean, look, that we develop, that's our core of our research and development programs are the administration of microbes to impact human health, which is scientifically how you define a probiotic. Very unfortunately for consumers in the United States, the term is not regulated the way it is in the other parts of the world. So you get partially why you can buy probiotic pillowcases and chocolate bars and tortilla chips. But in our world, it's a pretty serious field of science. Yeah.
Guilty. Guilty.
Well, I mean, UN many other large part of the market, because I think it's been a term that's really been unfortunately sensationalized despite being a really serious area of science. And so when it comes to the notion of healing, I can get into why the notion of like the recovering is a little not scientifically integrous, but I think it's a nice framework for people to think about why they would make specific life choices. So the very first lever, and you guys probably know this from your work, of course, is, and probably one of the most impactful things beyond anything that any company can sell you, is the daily choices you make around nutrition and diet. I think those are some of the, probably one of the most critical levers that you can pull as a human being with individual agency over your health. And that is a very meaningful part of nurturing and cultivating health in the microbiome. And that is really guided by the notion that a predominantly plant-based diet with a diverse types of plants, and, you know, fruits, nuts, seeds, berries, dark polyphenolic foods, like, again, like really dark berries as a good example, or pomegranate, are not just food for good bacteria, like fiber, so that good bacteria can kind of grow and proliferate and flourish, but also have in them phytonutrients and other compounds that bacteria use to transform into really other important metabolites that are critical for your health. And in somebody, for example, who might be recovering, let's say, from alcohol addiction, where we know that alcohol use, by the way, even just two shots of Grey Goose vodka can impact the integrity of the gut wall, not just from a microbial perspective, from the human cell wall. And so what we know is that the food sources and the nutrient sources for example, the cells along the mucosa and the things that kind of keep your gut wall, keep it tight, so to speak, and which is a very important function of the gut, you know, we know that those compounds can be made from microbes when they have the correct compounds from plant-based foods to turn into and then feed those cells so that they can do their job of course, keeping the mucosa and the gut wall integrous. And so that's like one small example, but you can break down many compounds that are critical for your microbes, again, not just to grow the good stuff, but to actually allow them to use those compounds to make things that are really important for aspects of your health that go beyond the gut, actually, in the immune system. And so that's nutrition and diet, and happy to get into certainly other particular, like very specific things you could do.
Yeah. Well, nutrition and diet makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. And going into the question I know Marcia wants to ask too, it's just like, you know, when I have two little ones, a 2 and a 3-year-old, but you know, the doctor was also talking about during birth, you know, we pass on our microbiomes, right, to our children. Is that correct?
Like, yes.
are we kind of like the state of which my microbiomes are in, basically get passed into my daughter and my son,
yes.
Right?
Well, I would say that the best way to think about it, and this is actually where we got our name, is what you're referring to is the process of seeding. And seeding is the biological process by which an infant or even more recently, a fetus is first exposed to the foundational microbes that will form the beginning of the development of their microbiome. Now, previously and until recently, most scientists believe that the womb was sterile and therefore most of the seeding happened at birth. What we are starting to understand, to your point, is that the maternal microbiome and the metabolites, this is why it was so important why I was saying that the things that you eat and how you take care of yourself, it's not just which microbes, but it means what are they doing? What are they creating? Those metabolites circulate in your blood. By the way, a really crazy fact is that after a course of antibiotics, you could take your blood work before antibiotics and after. And after a course of antibiotics, you cannot for a period of time match your blood from a metabolic perspective to the blood that you had prior to antibiotics, just to show you the impact of antibiotics on the gut, what the microbes can do, then what's circulating in the blood. So what they're starting to learn about in science is actually all of the maternal factors that go into that seeding process prior to birth. But on a very basic level, you're absolutely right, which is that the majority, that first large, what we would say the mother load of microbes happens at birth, and that can happen either through a C-section or through vaginal birth. If it's vaginal birth, those very first microbes are constituted by vaginal microbes, fecal microbes, and skin microbes from the mother. And then, of course, immediately coming out, it's whatever environment you're in. And then if it's a C-section, it more closely resembles the mother's skin microbiome for a period of time. Then, of course, there are other factors right after birth, such as the presence of breastfeeding, the absence of antibiotics, the environment, other siblings, family, being outside, whether or not you have a pet.
Formula.
whether or not you breastfeed, right? Or what nutritional source, because there are many formulas now that are being constructed, ourselves included, to account for, if you are not breastfeeding, certain carbohydrates and microbes that you would get in breast milk, which, by the way, even breast milk, much like many other parts of our body, is experiencing a decrease because of our modern lifestyle and so many other problems that, you know, we have as a result of modern living are also, now there's guidance starting around even the supplementation of breast milk from a microbiome perspective So it's not just kind of formula versus breast milk necessarily anymore if you're looking at it from a pure microbiome perspective. So and that research is developing, and really interesting work is being done today on that. And so there's so many factors after that point of birth. And just for anyone listening, I think sometimes there's a lot of shame associated with C-sections versus vaginal births when it comes to microbiome. Just for comfort, if there was no antibiotics in the first 18 to 36 months, and there was the presence of breastfeeding for maybe at least 6 months to a year, they start to see that those microbiomes from a child that was vaginally birthed versus a C-section actually start to converge, which I think is really interesting. So, there are many things I think, you don't think. Well, I think a lot of women are C-sections are like some invitation to a lifetime of health problems, but actually there are other aspects that I think can be really influential too.
Ara, I wanted to ask you, it just seems like there's such a vast amount of information and studies, et cetera, that have been done. How did you originally personally get interested in this, specific field?
It's a great question. But just to zoom way, just to zoom out, maybe not this field, but certainly science and health. My mom died when I was in high school, and that was my first real experience researching clinical trials and reading scientific papers. And that was my first entree into this place between the science that was being done and what happens in our health and the way we make choices and how we go about health. And I think that set off, honestly, a lifelong fascination for me. Even though I never studied it, I've always kept up with a lot of, I think, the forward-looking parts of science and different fields, and have for some reason became that person that everybody texts for advice. And mostly not because I know anything, but because I'm very good at research and I'm very good at synthesizing and then actually developing, I think, the right question set to be able to figure something out. And what I realized over the years is that sometimes it's not about being the expert, but sometimes it really is about how empowering actually the translation can be, and just surfacing the right questions, which I think can be very empowering for people.
That's the word that was coming to my mind as well, yes. Empowering, because everything that you're talking about is, to take a personal look at what's going on, what are your choices, how are they affecting, your body, your microbiome, your overall health. And that is such an empowering notion.
It is. And I think even for one.
That must be rewarding for you.
Well, I find it rewarding because I think it offers a construct for people that, and I hate to say, this is going to sound maybe silly to your earlier point about asking about the microbiome. I sometimes think it offers a lot of the ideas that even some things like religion does, right? Which is that, and particularly for people in recovery or for a child who doesn't want to eat their vegetables or, anyone who's experiencing resistance to change, no matter how small or how big or what the stakes are. I think when you have this idea, I think the microbiome is interesting, right? Because it's part of you, but it's also not human, but it's this thing that you're accountable to. Because the more you can feel accountable to it, the more it can be accountable to you and to keeping you healthy. And I think there's a beautiful symbiosis. By the way, it's the only codependent relationship I'll endorse. But I think that it's a really nice idea that for people who are struggling to do something for themselves, it's an entity that you can actually actively do something for that in turn is incredibly important for you. And I think for some people, it's easier to do things for yourself, for others, and for something other. That's what religion, you name it, a community, whatever, your best friend, whatever it is, it's sometimes easier on a path to recovery or to making change in your life to externalize something you can do something for, because it's very hard sometimes to do something for yourself. And I think that it's interesting. The microbiome is interesting. I always say to men, if you really can understand the microbiome, it will be the closest you'll ever understand what it feels to being pregnant. Because you do have this whole entity inside of you that you are, your choices directly impact. And in turn, obviously, the benefits, of course, can be lifelong and incredibly important. And I think that, yeah, it offers, I think, a really, I think depending on how you want to look at it, I know people that tell me they think about their microbiome when they meditate, so it's kind of an interesting way to think about it. And thank you for asking that, because it was definitely something that not everyone always kind of picks up on.
So, like, talking about, you know, empowerment that Marcia was just, you know, mentioning, for us as adults, I just to kind of discuss your book, a kid's book about your microbiome, that's the title. It seems like this book came about to inspire children to care about their personal health, or maybe view their, you know, learning about their microbiome will help them, you know, maybe take ownership of their health or make choices about their, you know, what foods they want to try or eat. You know, I have toddlers right now, and it's almost impossible to get them to eat something they don't want to eat. But, you know, I could see if once they learn how to communicate a little bit better and they have more comprehension, that this would be an amazing tool to kind of teach them about what's going on inside of themselves, which again turns to more, I think, empowerment and excitement about maybe the foods we do eat, or that we can actually make choices to lead us to a healthier life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. We wrote the book for a number of reasons. I think we really believe that language and education is itself an intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you probably know this from so much of your guys' work with, like, you know, addiction recovery and really, like, the psychology of anyone who's coming up in the world, is that the ideas and concepts and language that your grown-ups use around you, whether it's telling you things about yourself that you internalize, whether it's communicating constructs and ideas that are good or bad about the world, undoubtedly shape your journey and the way you see the world and the way you understand and see yourself.
Yeah.
And as you
they're little parrots.
Sure,
they literally pick up on everything you do or say. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But more than that, they internalize it right. And integrate it into their sense of identity, into their lens for how they make decisions and how they grow up. And, you know, with addiction and recovery, there's so many narratives that you internalize early, mm-hmm. that lead you to
down
places, of course, that are often not that down those paths. And those are the internal voices that are, we as parents sometimes take for granted how important the language and the framing is. And so much of the book for me is like, how early can you give a child this whole idea of this crazy invisible world that lives inside of them, that is important for their health, that gives them a way to see the world. They can look at, you know, soil and pick up a handful of soil and know that there's more microbes than stars in the galaxy just in their hand, which is extraordinary just to think about that, right? And so I think that it gives kids, and it was important to us, because when you're thinking about kids, and by the way, even grownups, because a lot of grownups don't admit that they don't know a lot of the basics. I know I learn a lot reading certain books to my child, who wouldn't know that I didn't know what we were reading about. And it was an awesome way to say, like, if you start the idea of this concept early, and especially because if you imagine in only one generation, if you're a child of the antibiotics generation, you know how literally this is like a 180 from all the language that we grew up thinking about. How all germs are bad, everything needs to be killed, and how sanitization and over hygiene are so critical. So you can imagine that literally in one generation, the language that we were given around these areas, which by the way have contributed to the detriment of our health, is now a whole 180, and we can bring up children that think so differently about microbes, and not just that, about the choices that they can make every day. And there's really fun things that you can use, particularly like for brushing your teeth, like saying you're getting rid of the sugar bugs, or for, you know, for eating vegetables, to
so
say that
good.
you're feeding the bugs because they give you a superpower to make sure that your body works well.
Oh, that's great.
So that you can play. Yeah, you know, there's so many, like, it's kind of what I was saying about the recovery, right? It gives you an external reason outside of because I told you so, to be able to explain scientifically, but also gives them a fun way to think about why they're doing something, which gets you out of the direct conflict of, because I'm asking you to and telling you to, which
Right, it's not a power struggle.
Exactly, which doesn't work with kids.
Well, now I say sweet potatoes are good for your eyes. You're going to have the best eyesight. Or I'll try to like explain, you know, why how certain vegetables impact, like your nails will grow strong, or this will be, you know, it's trying to like, right, not have such a power struggle and explain to them the nutritional benefits.
Yes. And by the way, what's really fun is when you really realize that they integrate those things because you hear them tell it to other people.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
And that's the best. That's when you know it's been learned, right? Is that they feel empowered. You see an empowering moment where they explain to someone else why they should eat something or why they should do something, you know, which is really fun.
All right, before we run out of time, please talk to me like I am a 7-year-old. Tell me a few simple things that I can do, that we can do, that the audience can do to improve their microbiome.
Eat plants and lots of them. Fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and like not the same ones every day just because they're your favorites, but actually lots of different types. Because the more diverse different types of plants and compounds, the more diverse your microbiome.
I mean, don't you get routine, Marcia? Okay. I mean, I know I eat berries every morning, but I eat the same berries, and then I eat the same vegetables pretty much every night.
Yes. Which,
you know, it's true. It's I took just really quick, Ara, just to, and I want to hear the other recommendations, but I took a test. A company sent me a kit. I won't get into like the intricacies of how they get your microbiome or how they like could tell you about your gut health, but they came back with
And I won't get into the intricacies of how they can't tell you about your microbiome.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I'm glad that maybe they can't tell me. But they came back with like everything's perfect, and you know, I'm not saying I'm not going to mention the company, but I'm just saying I know that there's many companies that exist like this. But I just wanted to like quickly ask if these companies are accurate or not, or maybe you can't speak to that because you don't know the specific one I'm speaking about.
I can say it this way, which is that we have some of the leading microbiome researchers in across almost every field of microbiome within our ecosystem and within our company. And at every single moment and any point in time, we could have easily activated a home diagnostic test. And we have a large member community to which we could have sold that. And we have never done that to date, if that tells you anything.
Okay, good. Thank you. So continue.
Interesting.
That answers it. Yeah.
I do agree with you, though, Erica, about getting into a pattern. So, Ara, when you were saying, eat a varied fruits and vegetables, that's when I start to get a little,
nervous.
Anxiety because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not eating enough variety.
Everything's relative, right? Like if you were eating cheeseburgers every day and you said, I can eat carrots once a week, but I can only eat carrots, I'd say eat carrots. You know, it all becomes very relative, but,
right.
The American Gut Project, which is like one of the largest citizen science projects out of UCSD, had really interesting research that showed that 30 different types of plants in a given week created a really interesting effect of diversity and impact of diversity in the microbiome. So it is, as I said, it's very hard because habit also creates compliance. You know this from recovery. So I don't want to like screw up anyone's.
I'm not telling people to
diet than screw up anyone. Yeah. But yes, if you can incorporate different fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds.
It's a great tip.
That would be great to diversify. I think, as we know, diversity in almost all things is a healthier and more sustainable way to live. So that's with people and diet equally. And then I would say, one of my favorite nature programs says, get off the screen and into the green. And that is because getting children outside in nature exposes them to a whole host of microbes that they are not getting exposure to inside, not just from the soil, but from, plants, of course, from the air, but also has a really important part of building what they call adaptive immunity. And interestingly, there was an amazing study, I believe it was in Norway, in a daycare facility where they found that increasing the biodiversity of the outdoor environment of the to be more representative of nature at the school impacted the children's gut and skin microbiomes, which in turn impacted and strengthened their immune systems or their immune responses. And they think that obviously it was very early and small study, but really there's a lot of hypotheses that the exposure to the natural environment most of us live in the built, what they call the built environment, is incredibly important. Just as another anecdote for so many parents and other people who are listening, like you cannot really find allergies, for example, in Amish populations. And that's, they believe it's because of the exposure to the endotoxins and other microbial exposure that happens from very early age, that's training your immune system to never identify those things as, right, inflammatory. And so I cannot emphasize being outside enough. It's not just like a, I know it sounds like one of those tips, like drink more water and everyone's like, yeah, yeah. But actually, like, I think the science is really starting to prove out why that's so incredibly important. And then I think, you know, there's things.
What about sleep? Yeah. What about sleep, Ara?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Microbes have their own circadian rhythm. And they need rest too. Other forms of rest for them are, of course, also intermittent fasting and limiting time windows for eating. So rest is not just sleep for them, but also rest is moments where you're not asking them to do
digesting
like, a tremendous amount of work, like digest your food. But absolutely, rest is incredibly important. And then the last, which we touched on earlier, which I do really much, of course, believe in, and it's our core part of our research, is to incorporate a probiotic. But of course, I say that with very large, you know, caution tape, because, you know, the way that those are currently marketed and are often not, you know, that aligned in terms of from a scientific perspective. So it's really important that people do their homework before they would choose one. Which I think is important for all aspects of health, but particularly if you're going to put bacteria into your body.
Mm. Yes, Erica and I were talking last week on the show about how we both agree that sleep is so critical to, you know, energy, brain function, emotional regulation, and now we're finding out, you know, for our gut health and everything else as well. I did want to ask you though. When you think about finding the right probiotic, you said do your research. But, I mean, can you tell us in general, without naming a brand or whatever, you know, where do we start? Is that a health food store? You know,
it is challenging because, like, you know, one of the things we care a lot about, of course, is the transparency and making sure people can get all of the information about, like, every strain that we use. And, I mean, the very simple guidance is that I think anyone that's claiming anything regarding a condition or a disease, you know, they're doing something that's wholly illegal. And that would probably is a good indicator. So if someone's claiming, it can, you know, alleviate IBS, Crohn's disease, you know, autism, like really any of the things that it all, I can't tell you how many things we see. Those are immediate markers that someone is not following regulatory, which probably to me means, there's probably a lot of other areas of that business that are probably not also done with kind of integrity. I would say certainly looking for the specific strains, so not just the species on the label. So knowing that there's like a numbers or specificity to the label to understand that they're not just telling you what species, but also the strain, which just to put it in like layman terms, it would be like having a dog and not knowing that you had a lab. And I think especially, you know, look, I think people are smart in terms of they understand some of the cues. With probiotics, it's challenging because very few people put them in any kind of delivery system that can survive and make it to the gut. And into the small intestine, to the colon, where majority of where microbes do their work. And so it is challenging I can certainly say there are aspects and there are certain strains that you can look up on what's called the ISAP site, ISAPP site, there's a catalog where you can look up if a strain has been studied to do the thing that the product is claiming to do. However, that doesn't mean that you are going to then know that it was included in the formulation and the correct dosage that was done in the clinical study to know if it's even in the right amount, let alone in a way that could make it to the part of your body where it could be impactful. So it's a very, it's such a technological, but also scientific field that we've been hard pressed to find companies that kind of do the right thing. And are able to kind of offer that kind of specificity. I would say the other part of it, the other part and transparency, the other part of choosing a probiotic is that, you know, a little of that, and I hate to say this, but it is some trial and error, which is that not everybody responds to Tylenol. So there's, you know, in science, you would say there's responders and non-responders. And so some people will be a strong responder and some people may be a non-responder. And you see that in clinical research all the time. You see that with placebo. And you see that, of course, with every single drug and any intervention on the planet. And so I would say that sometimes it does come down to trying things. But I would say that certainly there's very specific, looking up the specific strains at least is the very simple way. And then doing a quick, just like gut bullshit check on the language being used, is probably the next part, to use your gut instinct, knowing that not everybody's a scientist and has the tools to like unpack everything. Because the company that's being sensational or hyperbolic about changing, you know, going to change your life, is probably the company that's maybe taking some liberties in other areas that wouldn't ethically necessarily lead to what I would imagine to be a very good, high quality product. Obviously, I'm very proud of our approach, and it is the only one that I would recommend today, but that's just because I know everything we do. I know what we do. And I of course, part of what we set out to do was to create a new standard in that category that we find to be so misinformed and very misleading and confusing for people.
Yeah, well, thank you. Oh my God, Ara, thank you so much. You are a wealth of wonderful information that I think everybody is going to appreciate. And I think we're all going to leave this conversation with so much more knowledge, which is what our show is all about, is trying to empower people with knowledge so that we can live our best lives and be healthier, you know, not only physically, but mentally and emotionally. And I think this is going to be a fantastic thing for people to kind of learn about. So can you tell our audience where people could find the book, where people can find you, and you know, any other social media, anything that you have where we can connect?
Absolutely. The book you can find at seed.com/akidsbookabout. You can find our probiotic and more about what we do at seed.com. And if you want to learn something all the time and see all the really fun science content that we put out in the world, you can go to @seed on Instagram.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. We have one more question for you. This is our closing question. Marcia?
Yeah. So, Ara, thank you so much. Just like Erica said, I feel like I've learned literally so much in the last half hour. But Erica and I have what we call our deep dive questions, because we want our audience to connect with you, not only, you know, through all the amazing research and everything that you've done and everything that you stand for within the scientific community, but as a person. Our deep dive questions are, number one, what is your greatest fear? And number two, what is your superpower?
Oh, man.
Those are hard. They're hard, right?
What comes up? I know.
My greatest fear is... Those are wonderful questions. I mean, I have a million thoughts. it's a wonderful question. I think my greatest fear would be not realizing some of the meaning that, and the aspects of my life that I think where I derive the most meaning, and somehow that not persisting in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my superpower, I think, is seeing the world with my head tilted and connecting dots that through this lens of kind of love and curiosity that maybe sometimes other people don't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. That's I love great. That.
Beautiful. Yes. Great answers, Ara. Yeah. Thank you so Thanks. Much for being with us and taking the time and for sharing your knowledge and your love, and you're definitely an inspiration to all of us. So we're so happy to
Absolutely.
Have been with you. And
thank you.
Yeah, thanks you everybody
you keep
for
us
listening.
Posted. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for all your wonderful questions.
All right. Thank you guys. Thank you for listening to Rewiring Your Life. I'm Erica Spiegelman.
And I'm Marcia Stone. And we are signing off.
Bye-bye. Stay well, everybody.